Good Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, and we are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. We are live today from the 4th Annual 615 Open. That is our charity golf tournament out here at the Hermitage Golf Course, again, benefiting Folds of Honor. Teron Davenport is with us for the TD Power Hour, as always, on the program. TD, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. Let's start right off the top. What'd you think of Cam Ward yesterday at Titans OTAs?
You know, I thought he looked good. You didn't see any hiccups or anything like that as far as being able to spit the play out. It was clear he had command of the huddle. I really like the way he threw the ball in the middle of the field. He focused a lot on between the hashes, and he has some pretty nice tight window throws, so that looked good. And then even just the part where you got to communicate with your players, and you saw that with Van Jefferson after one of the reps. You know, they got together, and they talked about how Jefferson was coming out at the top of the route, and they connected on it later on in practice. So I thought that was good. I think overall it was what you would have expected from a number one pick, and there's still more to build on.
So I was surprised yesterday, or I shouldn't say surprised, but I did see that Ward talked about working on his timing and his accuracy. And one thing I did notice early, kind of in the warm-up period, more than anything else, was it felt like to me, you know, he was maybe a little out in front on a guy, a little behind on a guy, a little up on a guy. You know, again, not like he was throwing it over his head or anything crazy like that, but just a little bit off against air. And then I heard Cam Ward say that about his timing, and I think those two things go hand in hand. What did you make of it?
Yeah, so you're not talking about warming up. You're talking about routes on air during somewhat of the install period. You're right. It was, or just before the install period, rather. He was a little behind. You could tell that they're still working to get in lockstep, and that's to be expected, right? You got guys, it's only day two, right? At that point, that was the second day that they were actually on the field and getting work in. So it's going to take some time, but, you know, where he likes to throw the football, you better make sure that you are on time and you are precise with it, because that's the muddy waters. That's where the sharks are, and they could pick it off. So you got to be on point.
What did you think of the throw he made outside the numbers yesterday to Io Manor? You know, I think it was Io Manor was running a post on the left sideline, Cam threw the pump fake, and then put the ball right there. Io Manor, I don't know if he needed to dive for the catch, but he did dive for the catch. I thought that was probably Cam's biggest highlight of the day yesterday. What did you think of that?
Yeah, that was actually a corner route he was running, and I love the anticipation. He threw it, you know, a little before he made his break. And look, I'll say this. Every single time I watch Io Manor, I like him a little bit more. And I love the way he got his head around it. He found the football. I don't know if he had to dive for sure, but you know what? He said, I'm going to make sure I secure this catch. And he dove, and he got the feet in bounds, and it was a long completion. So that was definitely a good throw, and it was something that you didn't see him do too much of yesterday, throw outside the numbers. But rest assured, when it's time to do that, he can. But let me say this. One of my favorite throws was actually a deep over to Chimere DK, and it's funny because when DK spoke at rookie minicamp, you know, I asked him about them working on that route, because I don't know how much film of DK you watch, but he is trouble on those deep overs, right? And so Cam, he throws those really well. So if they could connect and hit on those a couple times, it's going to be big for the Titans offense.
So I do wonder, TD, to that point about, you know, Cam, and one thing that did stand out was his release. You know, there was a ball that he threw for James Prochet where, you know, I don't know, you know, if Prochet was maybe a couple inches taller, he probably brings it down, probably should have brought it down anyways. But the ball came out of Cam's hand so quickly. And I do wonder, is that something that, you know, the Titans are going to use early on of, hey, we're going to get the ball out quickly? And with Rudolph and Levis last year, am I wrong for thinking that maybe they were a little bit more mechanical when it came to their release than Cam in the way that he can get the ball out?
I don't know about the mechanical part of it. I think, you know, for Rudolph, one thing that he did do well was find where he needed to go with the ball and get it there. He definitely did that. So I thought that was good. But I think, the thing that you have with Cam that is good is he's already making quick reads and working through stuff fast as opposed to taking time. Like, the game is not too fast for him right now. Now, again, we're talking about OTAs, phase three. Like Denard Wilson said yesterday, he's not throwing the whole kitchen sink at them because they're still installing and working through stuff themselves. But for what he's going against now, I think he's doing a good job. And even I have to give Will Levis credit, too, because there were two things that Levis did that impressed me since you mentioned him. And the release, there was a quick throw, a quick slant to, I believe it was Jaquan Jackson. And he caught it and he was able to find a crease and he took off. And then you also had the throw that he made to it was actually James Roche on the backside dig route. Gabe Dudley-Lally got a really good jam on number one on the left side, and then that made Levis come off of that read. He looked at number two, that wasn't there, and quickly reset his feet and directed it to the right side, found Proche on that dig route and drove it right to him. That's impressive. That's good progress for Levis. But you still had the same old that you saw last year, and that was the pick six by Mark Perry. And, that was the end practice.
What did you think of the one play Cam made yesterday where the pocket broke down and Cam was basically surrounded and he kind of set himself a little bit and then threw the ball over the middle and the ball was batted down by, I believe it was Curtis Jackson, the linebacker, second-year linebacker out of Penn State that batted the ball down. Really dangerous throw. Do you think that that's something that, because we saw Cam make those kind of plays at Miami where there'd be edge rushers and he'd be, okay, I can wiggle around here and do something there. Do you think that's something that the Titans are going to say, hey, in the NFL, you're going to probably have that ball going the other way. We need to be careful with that. Or do you think it's something that it's like, okay, you did it now the first time. Now you understand what it's like in the NFL. It's going to be a little bit more different than college, but still maybe try to go out there and make some plays when there's nothing there.
I think they're going to be very careful not to coach that playmaker out of them and finding that fine balance. That's something that's important. I've been asking Brian Callahan about that since, February at the Combine, and that is something that they have to figure out because Cam will make those plays, and I talked to Jordan Reed, ESPN NFL draft analyst. He was on Talking with TD last week, and he said you're going to have a lot of those throws from Cam where you're like, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. Man, that was a great play. So it kind of comes with the territory. You got to live and die by it.
TD, what did you think of the fact that Brandon Allen got the first team reps, Cam got the most reps, and then Levis third, Boyle fourth yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, that's all – it's nothing major. I think it's just all something that they're doing. Because I noticed Boyle started off one of the other periods. So, they're balancing it out as far as, like, who's starting where. And I think it's just one of those things where they're trying to make sure all the guys get looked with the receiver. So, you're going to see Cam on the field with Xavier Restrepo. You'll see Levis with Van Jefferson, so on and so forth. I think it's just to mix it up. But you're right, the reps for Cam, there are a lot more. So, it's definitely clear who they're trying to jade the test towards.
I was seeing things on Twitter yesterday where people were talking about, Levis versus Ward, some sort of competition. Let's just say, knock on wood, Cam sprains an ankle before week one. This just me, TD. I think Brandon Allen is more likely to start for the Titans than Will Levis. Am I wrong for thinking that?
Look, Brandon Allen had a couple throws yesterday, and I was like, oh, okay, this is impressive. But for the most part, he and Tim Boyle, it seemed like they were on a level below, Levis and Ward. I think if Levis is here, I think Levis is going to go ahead and be the backup, and they'll push Brandon Allen to the practice squad. That's the way I look at it if Levis is here. And then if they find a way to trade him, you know what happens. Brandon Allen will be right there as the backup, and Tim Boyle will be on the practice squad. And I think that's probably the direction it's going to go. They're going to do everything they can to showcase Levis. And I don't think it's mandatory to trade him, but he's probably going to end up elsewhere.
So what do you think the plan is here? Because, I mean, I don't think that with Levis that they were adamant that they did not shop him. Jim Wyatt writing about it on Titan Stationery with quotes from Chad Brinker. They said after the draft, we did not entertain, we did not try to trade Will Levis. And I do wonder what they could realistically get, even if Levis does play well, you know, for a backup type player. Last year, Malik went for a seventh, you know, Joe Milton went for a fifth and brought a seventh back. I'm trying to figure out what realistically they expect to get out of Will Levis in all of this.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you on that one, but I know desperate means call for desperate measures, and I saw that personally in 2016 when Carson Wentz was – he was there with Sam Bradford and Chase Daniel, you know, and they ended up – Teddy Bridgewater went down, and your guy, Rick Spielman, you know, he said, hey, I got a first-round pick. Let me go ahead and give this to you for Sam Bradford. And next thing you know, Carson Wentz, he's in the field hunting ducks, and he finds out that he's the starter. And we know the rest of the story. So it definitely could happen. I think it's just a matter of catching the team desperate for a quarterback. And I'm not saying that they'll get a first-round pick, but, I mean, a fourth or fifth is definitely possible in the right situation.
You know, what's crazy is I was going to say, you know, Price is right me here. What do you think, even if Levis does well in training camp and in the preseason games, what do you think is – really fair to expect? Like, they're not going to get a second round pick for Will Levis.
Heck no.
So what do you think would be fair to expect for his value?
Yeah, I think a fifth round pick is fair. I think that's something that they could get. And I mean, you know, you could do something with a fifth round pick. You could package it to move up, or, you know, you could get a Jarvis Brownlee Jr., a Deion Brown.
Why did they not try to do that in the offseason? Was Levis not worth a fifth round pick then?
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't try to do it, honestly. I couldn't tell you. Maybe at that point they weren't 100% set that they were going to, you know, go with the with Cam Ward and not trade to get more picks. Because, I mean, if you're trading to get more picks, you're only doing that with Will Levis on the roster. So maybe it was because they didn't know exactly 100% which direction they were going to go.
TD is with us. We'll hit your phones at the end of the hour, as we always do, 615-737-1025. Yesterday, everybody was there. Except Jeffrey Simmons. And D. Mace, not totally happy about it. What does TD think? We'll do that next. Stillman and Company, it's the TD Power Hour, 102.5 The Game.
It starts now. And when it starts over a new, the leader, or one of the supposed leader, a guy that wants to be a leader, he needs to be here day one. Day one, you need to be here. And Jeff was it. Again, he's not a bad person. No. But if it had something to do with family issues, like an emergency or something, Callahan would have made sure he said it. Because why? He would have been covering, you know, for his players. But he didn't say that. And that's what I was looking for. So did you just want to stay with your guy and work out? Okay, I get that, Jeff. But I get that if you're winning 10 games a year, 11 games a year, 12 games a year. But when you're winning 4.5 games over the last two seasons, and you are the worst franchise in the National Football League, and this is no diss to that franchise. I'm just basing it upon fact, record. I'm looking at it. I'm not trying to make them any worse than what they are. I'm looking at their record, and the record says that they are the worst franchise in the National Football League right now. And in order to get out of that, guys like Jeffrey has to sacrifice some of that off time.
There you go. That was D. Mace today, not happy with Jeffrey Simmons' absence yesterday from phase three of OTAs. Chris Sanders echoing a similar thought. Brian Callahan says, hey, you know, this offseason we're going to focus on leadership. We're going to focus on team building. We're going to focus on all those things. And day one of phase three OTAs, or I guess technically day two, but the first open one for the media, no Jeffrey Simmons. TD, your thoughts?
It's not good. It's not good at all. And I'm not one to really harp on something like this, but I think in this case it's something that you have to look at, because why? This is an off season where they did a whole lot to revamp the way that they're approaching things. They did a whole lot to make sure that there are leaders that emerge. They did a whole lot to make sure that there's team bonding. They did a whole lot to make sure that they emphasize different things that led to a lot of mistakes last year. And if you remember, Denard Wilson, one of the things he said yesterday was how many times they were in the red zone and they had a team stop on third down and there was a dumb penalty, mm-hmm. and that caused the series to go on and eventually led to a touchdown. You and I both know who had a good chunk of those penalties. and that's Jeffrey Simmons. So to me, even though he's a guy that Brian Callahan does not have to worry about being ready for the season, he is someone that when you talk about this team, he's the first guy that is mentioned when you're talking about their premier players, right? And then it kind of trickles down because guess who else wasn't there yesterday?
Tavondre Sweat.
Now, I'm not saying that he did that because Jeffrey Simmons did it, but one of the things I remember talking to Mike Borgonzi about was a culture, right? And he talked about when DeAndre Hopkins got to the Chiefs, and he said, you know what? Hopkins had no choice but to practice. Why? Because that's the culture. When you see Jason or Travis Kelce out there hurt but still practicing, there's no way Hopkins could justify not practicing. Just the same, you see Jeffrey Simmons, he's your premier player out there practicing, and we know the way Jeffrey practices when he's out there. He practices really hard. He runs to the ball. He's talking a lot. He's very fired up. This rubs off on everybody. That's not there right now. So I think it is a bad thing. It's something that he has to consider. And to your point, Brian Callahan didn't say, hey, he has this issue or that issue. I know Jeff has some things going on, but, you know, Callahan didn't come out and say any particular reason why he wasn't there or that it was, you know, and I understand it's voluntary, and that's quotation marks. It's voluntary but encouraged.
So when it comes to the Simmons thing, if you were Brian Callahan and you, again, are highlighting how important leadership is and how important this offseason is after the season the team had last year, how would you feel about Simmons not being there? You know, I've talked about how Floyd told me when he was general manager, the players voted on the captains, but he was the one who counted the votes, meaning if they voted someone I didn't think should be captain, he wouldn't be captain. I'm wondering if you're Callahan, do you look at this and say, hey, maybe this year Sebastian Joseph Day will be a team captain and not Jeffrey Simmons? What do you do if you're Callahan? Because it does kind of feel like, even if this isn't Simmons' intention, it does kind of feel like Simmons is kind of brushing off the offseason program and that leadership element and team-building element of it that Callahan has been saying repeatedly is so important.
Well, here's the thing. I know he's in Dallas and he's working. Like, there's no getting around that. Jeff is getting the work in that he needs to get. So let's not, you know, even begin to intimate that, you know, he's just not doing anything. I will say that. It's just this year, optically, it's better for him to be there just because of the rebirth that they're trying to create. So that's the only thing I'll say about that. What Callahan should do, honestly, you can't get too upset about it because, again, it is voluntary. You know what I mean? Now, if Jeff comes when the involuntary portion starts and he's not in supreme shape and everything, then, yeah, it's a problem. But, I mean, honestly, this is, you know, it's a week, 2 weeks out of the off-season program. I don't think it's the end of the world if he misses, but it's just not good. And this is a team that was just that, not good last year. So you want to do everything you can to get the chips rolling in the right direction and have somewhat of a successful year.
TD, do you think Simmons understands how important the optics of being there, given what Callahan's trying to implement, is?
I think he understands. I think he does get it and knows that, you know, as a leader, it's probably better to be there. I do.
So then, what's that telling us if he doesn't go? Like, he knows, hey, it's important that I'm there. This is important to coach, but I'm good. What's that say?
Well, I think there's an understanding that, you know, he's confident in his training. It has worked pretty well, you know, to this point. He is the best player on the team, right? So I think he's confident in that training, and there's an understanding that up until it's absolutely, you know, mandatory to be there, he'll get his thing going on his own in Dallas with his trainers.
Yeah, that sounds awful, though. I mean, he had 5 sacks last year. I mean, it's not like we're talking
again,
about LT.
Again, you focus on it, it's, you know, here's the thing. Sacks aren't everything. You got to be able to impact the quarterback in other ways as well. He needs to get those sacks up. He needs to make more game-changing plays, but let's not act like the man wasn't performing at all.
I would say Simmons, and I agree with you, I think he's the best player on the team. I would say Simmons is a good NFL player, I believe Simmons thinks he is a great NFL player. And bothers me a little bit.
Here's the thing. Every guy in the NFL thinks they're great. So it's not unique to Jefferson.
Yeah, but everybody else on the team is there. You know, that's the thing where if Simmons is like, hey, my training is good enough, it's like, is it? Like, you know, last year I thought Simmons left a lot to be desired. I mean, you're Jeffrey Simmons. You're making the money you're making. And you let the Green Bay Packers run all over you the way they did, or the Indianapolis Colts to run for 355 yards. Like, that's not a good sign. That's the stuff that bothers me.
It's not collectively as a defense. I mean, they didn't just run for 350 on Jeffrey Simmons, right? There's things that have to happen, right? Like, if he's in one gap and there's another gap that's the wall isn't sealed on that gap, and then the second level doesn't make the tackle and the safety isn't able to close it out, and it's a home run like happened against the Colts a couple times, well, I mean, that's on the whole defense.
How do you think he would feel? I said this earlier today. If I was the coach in September and I'm naming the captains, I would go Ward, Pollard, Ridley, you know, one of the offensive linemen, like maybe Zeitler or Cushenberry, you know, one of the offensive linemen, Morgan Cox, Barton, Hooker, and Joseph Day. How would Simmons react to that?
Well, I don't think it's something that he would like. I don't think it's something that would happen either. Because, I mean, would you not name Simmons the captain just because he wasn't at voluntary OTAs? Is that what you're telling me?
I personally would not name Simmons the captain because I think Simmons is more of a doer than he is a leader. I don't think he's a very good leader. And I think multiple times last year, he kind of felt like he had to take on the role of team spokesperson, you know, which used to be Kevin Byard's position. And I felt like he ended up with his foot in his mouth multiple times. I think Simmons, you know, would be better off just worrying about Simmons and not trying to be the team leader. And if that's the case, then fine, go off to Dallas and train. But if you're trying to be the team leader, you need to be at OTAs.
Voluntary OTAs. Look, again, it wouldn't hurt to be here. It wouldn't hurt. Not being here does more harm than good. I'll put it that way, because there is a lot of optics to it. But again, like Brian Callahan said, if there's one guy that he doesn't have to be concerned about getting ready, it's Jeffrey Simmons. So, I mean, you know, there's a give and take there.
TD is with us. We'll hit your phones at the end of the hour, as we always do, 615-737-1025. And coming up next, we heard from the assistant coaches, the coordinators yesterday. What did TD make of that? We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, live from the 615 Open at the Hermitage Golf Course. It's 1025 and 106.3 The Game.
With so many new players in the wide receiver room, how do you see them challenging and sharpening your secondary?
Yeah, I mean, anytime it's competition there. You know, we drafted some guys, Lockett being here. You know, I've gone against him numerous years as a slot receiver. Calvin keeps continuing to grow. So iron sharpens iron. And the better they are, the better we become. The better we are, the better they become. And the better both units and every unit on the team is, the better the team will be. And everything about us is about where the team is going. How do we make the team better? So it's been great to have the young guys there. It's been great bringing in the additions that we've had from a free agent standpoint. The team is getting better, and we're growing together. And if we're growing together and staying in the same direction, we'll be just fine.
There you go. That was Denard Wilson yesterday, Titans defensive coordinator. The Titans coordinators were at the podium yesterday, including the newest one, Bones Fossil, the special teams coach, Nick Holtz, the offensive coordinator, and Denard Wilson, the defensive coordinator. TD with us for the TD Power Hour. So, TD, let's start there. What did you think of the three coordinators yesterday? Let's start with Bones Fossil, since he was the first, you know, the new guy to go up there. What did you think of his first impression with the media yesterday?
I love his energy, and I like his approach to coaching and making players comfortable. One of the things he said that he wants to happen is for guys, obviously you're going to be afraid to mess up, right? You don't want to mess up, but a lot of times those risks that you take, those result into some big-time plays. Now, there's going to be times where it becomes a mistake, but he wants guys to be able to play and not be petrified of making a mistake. I think that's good, allowing them to play freely. I love the fact that he talked about the desired traits for punt return and kick return. That was one of the things I asked him about, and he said, well, look, you know, I want ball tracking skills. You got to be able, as a punt returner, to track, find, and catch the football, but then you also have to have that vision to be able to find the crease and get going the way you need to in order to make a big play. And we know it's been since 2012 that a punt return has been returned for a touchdown. So, you know, that's something that they need to get. And then you look, flip it to the other side, you got the kick returners. And the thing that I love, he said the traction again, but the other part of it was courage. And that's exactly what you need to have, because as a returner, like, when it's time to hit that, like, you got to go and hit it. And you know that there are, you know, 11 guys wanting to come and crush your skull. So you got to be able to, you know, have the courage to do so. I thought that was good. Then you look at just the way that he talked about, you know, guys being wild and you know, not having concern for themselves. Like, I like that, the reckless abandon, that you want that on special teams.
How do you feel about how the roster is shaking out special teams-wise? I'm sure throughout the process, Bones Fossil was included in, hey, you know, these are guys that can fit what we need as far as special teams are concerned, while also being able to help out other parts of the roster. When you watch them so far, you know, and again, it's one practice, but what did you feel about maybe where some of these guys are going to fit in on special teams?
Yes, I think you have Mike Brown. He'll probably slide in as a punt protector. We know that, the personal punt protector. I think you look at some of these guys, right, Bryce Oliver. You look at Alec Iamanner. I think he's going to come in and be a guy that can help out in the return game, or rather the coverage, punt coverage. So those are some. You got the linebackers. I want to ask him eventually, you know, how he feels about guys going to special teams to play their way onto the offense or onto the defense, because I think that's really what's going to happen, what we saw last year.
TD, what did you think of Nick Holtz? Now, it felt to me yesterday like Holtz was running more of some of the offensive drills. Now, when they went team period, Callahan was calling the plays. But at one point during the install, Callahan was standing on the side, kind of twirling his whistle around his finger, talking to Dave Ziegler. And Holtz and Bo Hardigree and Mike McCoy were kind of running more of the install on offense. I wonder what you thought of that. And maybe Holtz getting a little bit more responsibility and Callahan taking a little less responsibility as far as the offense is concerned.
Twirling his whistle, huh? Like, you have a way to just, like, try to paint the most negative picture.
That's what do you mean? He was just standing there spinning his whistle on his finger.
Right. But do you think he's not watching practice? Do you think
No. He's watching practice, but it was Holtz who was putting it in.
Holtz, and this is why. And this is why it's good to be there and be a little more involved. You know that he has been looking to make an effort to connect with the defensive side, to connect with the whole roster. So in an effort to do so, like, in order to be able to do that, you got to have your offensive coordinator step up and do the things that he needs to do. And I think, you know, that's what he's allowing Holtz to do, have a bit more input and you know, oversight of the installation period. That's all that it is. Like, he wasn't, like, twirling his whistle, you know, talking to Dave Ziegler about going to Cabo next summer. Like, they're talking more than likely about rosters. They're talking about, you know, different things that they're looking to do. I don't see a problem with him allowing Holtz to go ahead and oversee the install period.
What do you think about Mike McCoy? What do you think his role will be?
That's the interesting one. And I heard you mention that yesterday, and it was a very good observation that you mentioned. And I want to see what type of role, like, how much input he's going to be able to have, because, you know, judging from what we saw yesterday, he will be very, very involved. So that's a good thing. We know he's a guy that has seen some success calling plays in the past and, you know, as a coach. So I'm looking forward to seeing that whole thing, you know, evolve and what he ends up doing.
TD, what stood out from Denard Wilson's press conference yesterday?
You know, here's the thing, right? I like what Denard Wilson said about calling things a little differently and learning from last year. And that's the thing, like, you know, the more you do something, the better you're going to be at it. And I think this is another example. And it's just, you know, calling things a little bit differently. That's important. We'll see how that results into, you know, positive things or not. But I thought that was the most outstanding part of it. I do like the way he talked a bit about Draymond Jones. And, you know, when I talked to Mike McDonald, one of the things that he said was, hey, look, like, this is a guy that could play anywhere on the line from 0 to 9. And Denard was like, hey, look, I mean, we'll consider bumping him inside, you know, at nose on obvious passing downs. He's going to play all over, and I think that's a good thing. So just having that plan already in place for some of the new additions is big. I like that part of it. And then, like I said, the fact that he said that, you know, he's going to call plays a little bit differently, and he learned some things from last year.
You know, last year at this time, I noticed Gabe Judy-Lally out there in the secondary running with kind of the more varsity group, and he didn't really play a lot last year. I think he was on the practice squad some and then on the active roster some, but he didn't really play a lot in the actual games. Uh-huh. Gabe Judy-Lally was back out there with the varsity squad, had a nice PBU, though. I would have thrown the flag from where I was standing. Yeah, on the IO Manor throw. But Gabe Judy-Lally was really in the mix yesterday. What do you make of him? And really, outside of Brownlee, with Snead's, you know, availability up in the air, what do you make of kind of the battle at the cornerback position?
Yeah, don't you forget about Daryl Baker Jr. You know, mm-hmm. He came in and he played pretty well. So you do have him. Judy-Lally, again, like he had a good play that ended up helping the offense, right, because he jammed the receiver up so well. Levis quickly skipped that read and worked his way to the third, like we mentioned earlier. But, I mean, I think the competition is going to be good. Marcus Harris is another one, the guy that they drafted. I thought it was pretty intriguing seeing him, you know, at 5'8 or whatever he is, bumping outside and playing outside corner. You know what I mean? That was good to see. And I tell you this, I was watching when they were working on kind of like takeoffs with John Shaw, the speed and training coach. You know, they're attached to that machine. Man, that Marcus Harris is getting out there. So it's going to be cool to see that. And then also you look at the undrafted guy out of Iowa. He's intriguing also. The corner, his name slips my mind. But, you know, I think that's a good option for them that could also – help and maybe impressed during the preseason.
How much, you know, they talked about how guys are going to be moving in and out of the lineup here at OTAs, and they really did do a lot of that. You know, there were times where Mason Kinsey, for instance, was on the field with Calvin Ridley, and there were times where, you know, Anthony Orji was on the field with Cody Barton. And how do you see them doing that? And then how do you see that changing once they get to training camp and are kind of trying to build their team for the season together?
Yeah, so one of the things that Brian Callahan made clear was this is still an instructional period. And obviously they're going to compete, but it's still instructional period. So they're working through a lot of those things. I think you'll start to see the depth chart fall into place as you get closer to training camp. And once training camp goes, you know, Xavier Restrepo is not going to be working with Cam Ward until – you know, they're on the same team, so to speak, you know, the same unit. I think you're not going to see those mixes, you know, the Mason Kinseys and Calvin Ridley together. I think it's going to eventually balance out, and you'll see things start to, that hierarchy to start to fall in place.
All right, your phones for TD are next. 615-737-1025 on the program. That's 615-737-1025. We'll hit them next. We are live from the fourth annual 615 Open. Stillman & Company, 1025, 106 for the game. We are live from the 615 Open, and there is still a great, still plenty of time to go to 615open.com with our silent auction, everything benefiting Folds of Honor. Great experiences available there. I saw the Jason Aldean tickets. I went to Jason Aldean on Saturday in Toronto. It is a hell of a show. So get your bids in, you know, over there, etc. TD is with us for the TD Power Hour. TD, do you have a thought, or do you want to go to the phones?
No, to the phones.
T-Mac is going to kick us off. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. T-Mac, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
All right. With what's up, TD? With as many – doing pretty good. With as many receivers as they have on the team, do you think Xavier Restrepo is making the team? And if so, who are they doing without? in order for him to make the team and not hang up.
Yeah, no, that's the million-dollar question. Honestly, everybody wants to know if Restrepo is making the team. I mean, he has a shot. I think it really comes down to where he falls in the pecking order for that slot position, because that's pretty much, you know, what he does, right? There's not really much that you're going to get from him outside of that. He is a guy that he's not going to give you too much in the return game, but he will definitely – you need that ball caught and secured, you know, when a team is punting from – they're a 40-yard line, and you feel like they're going to try to pin it, and you need him to catch it, he's going to do that. But I don't know who they cut. Like, I mean, is it Bryce Oliver? Is it Van Jefferson? Like, do they keep three guys that work the slot or two? Like, how they do it, I think that's really what it boils down to, and it's way, way too early to say that he does or doesn't make the roster.
I mean, the way I look at it is I think there's the four with Lockett, Ridley, Io Manor, and DK. You know, and again, if one of these guys, you know, knock on wood, you know, injures an ankle in training camp, they may start the year on IR, and that may open up a spot for somebody. But I see those four, and then I feel like Van Jefferson has the inside track at a roster spot that he would almost have to lose or be beaten out, you know, in camp for that. And then, you know, I wonder, TD, what you thought about James Prochet yesterday, because he does – bring some return for them, and he does have NFL experience. What did you think of him?
Yeah, I mean, he brings some return and has NFL experience, but is his return ability, like, is that enough to offset what you may not be getting receiver-wise? And I think it's basically the opposite of Xavier Restrepo. Like, you could combine the two of them, you got a guy that's going to get a roster spot, but unfortunately you can't. So, you know, let's not forget, you know, Prochet got beat out in Baltimore by Tylan Wallace, you know, so it's not like a return opportunity is guaranteed for him here. Devin Duvernay, you know, beat him out first. So you have that. I just think, you know, it's not as much, hey, Van Jefferson against Restrepo as much as it's them against other guys at their position. That's why I mentioned the slot position. You know, is he going to – I think more or less, his direct competition is more of a Mason Kinsey than anybody else, because those two, to me, are battling to be the designated slot receiver if the Titans decide to hold a guy like that. They're battling to be the second slot.
One texter says, TD, what do you think so far of the new punter and the new kicker?
Yeah, I mean, look, we watch Hecker. I'll tell you this about Hecker. You look at him, you're not going to think he's a punter. Like, he's someone that he could take on some of those returners on his own. Like, that dude is – he's put together. The kicker, Joey Sly, still remains to be seen. You know, John Foster said he likes what he's seen from him. I think it's incomplete now, you know, incomplete.
One texter says, TD, we all know the holes this team has. Are there any position groups where you think the Titans are doing well, as in perhaps in the top half of the league?
Top half of the league. I think the D-line, you know, when Simmons is there with Sweat and you mix in Jones, I think you could definitely say that the D-line is up there. I like the safeties. I think Xavier Wood is an outstanding player, a steady presence. And I had that in my notes, he's kind of been a traffic cop back there, making sure that communication is happening. And obviously, Amani Hooker. I don't know if you saw Denard Wilson. He timed up a safety blitz pretty well, and Hooker tipped a Levis pass that was almost picked off. So you got those guys together. And I really can't wait to see Kevin Winston Jr. You know, I think he's going to end up being a starter next year, you know, at safety. So that's a good group.
One texter says, TD, Denard Wilson was very high on Femi Oladejo yesterday. Why do you think the Titans are so optimistic, given that his production was not that high at UCLA, albeit he changed positions?
Well, I think you said it right there. He changed positions. You're not going to get a bunch of sacks as an inside linebacker, right? And I think when you look at just learning that position, learning extra pass rush moves and those types of things, they're excited about the energy. They're excited about the I mean, you look at him, you're like, wow, like, this is the way the good Lord would put together a pass rusher if he did that specifically. So, and he got that number 7 on. That number 7 looks sweet on him. I love that. But more importantly, he has all of the traits, right, that really make up a guy that could be impactful. I just want to see how they go about handling him. Like, do you go ahead and you let him just be a guy that you send out there and you say, hey, man, go get the quarterback. Don't worry about nothing else. Just go get the quarterback. Or do you make him have to think and diagnose and do all those things, read the keys that a lot of outside backers have to do when they're out there on the field and not just passing situations?
One texter says, TD, I am fed up with Simmons. I felt like as a Titan, he impacted the quarterback as much as Jadeveon Clowney did when he was a Titan. Simmons is overrated until he steps up. And yet at the same time, I worry that if Brian Callahan does not make him a captain, Simmons would erupt in anger. What do you think would happen if Jared was the coach and Simmons was not made a captain?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think Simmons would like not being named the captain, but there's a high sense of pride with Jeffrey Simmons, and there's a desire to be great that Jeffrey Simmons has. So I think regardless, he's going to go out there and play his behind off. It just, you know, he wouldn't. I don't like speaking for someone else, but, you know, if he wasn't named the captain, I don't think he would be happy about it, but I don't think it would affect his play.
Well, maybe he could be mad at Brian Callahan on social media instead of being mad at me. One texter says, hey, TD, we never had to worry about Derrick Henry and whether or not he was doing what he needed to do to be in shape. But still, at times when they were installing a new offense, Derrick Henry showed up to voluntary workouts, and he is even there for the Ravens' voluntary workouts. If Derrick can do it, why not Simmons?
Well, there were times where Derrick Henry was not there. Let's not only look at parts of the truth. There were times where Henry wasn't there, so I'm not going to act like, oh, like he's an angel and Jeffrey Simmons is a demon. That's not the case. So I'll just put it that way.
I would say this, though. Like, I wonder if Simmons knows how important it probably was to Callahan that he be there, even though Callahan covered for him yesterday. Whereas I would think
Callahan would express that to him. Like, I'm pretty sure that's something that has happened in conversations.
Last one, TD. Texter says, TD, as of right now, do you think Will Levis will be on the Titans roster next season?
I don't know. If I say yes, you know, on Twitter, everybody, if he gets traded, it'll be like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. If I say no and he's still there, he's like, I don't know. How are we supposed to know? That man himself doesn't even know if he's going to be on the roster. So how the heck you want me to know?
Well, I don't even know if the Titans know.
Yeah, exactly. It's a worthless exercise to say yes or no.
Did you see, it reminded me of an answer. It was on Twitter yesterday. Did you see Joe Flacco when he was asked about mentoring Shadur and Dylan Gabriel and the answer he gave?
He was very careful to really elaborate upon that, wasn't he?
Oh, man. Joe Flacco was basically like, I feel like this is a gotcha question, because if I say no, I'm just here to do my job, then people get mad at me. And if I say, yeah, I'm here to mentor, then they say, you need to be there to do your job. And so I don't like answering the question, but I'll do my job. And if these guys learn things along the way, I thought it was so well said by Joe Flacco.
Yeah, no,
yesterday.
Excellent job. I covered Joe Flacco in Baltimore for a year, and, yeah, he was definitely on point with the media.
TD, great stuff. As always, talking with TD, of course, is always out there to listen to. We will talk soon.
I appreciate it. Take care.
Yep, TD joining us on the program. We are live from the 615 Open again. Tons of great stuff at the silent auction, 615open.com. So be sure to check that out. So if you can't come on out and golf with us today, you can still bid to benefit Folds of Honor. 615-737-1025. That is our phone number. Coming up next, I listened to Denard Wilson's press conference yesterday, and there was one really long answer he gave that just drove me nuts. It just drove me crazy. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.